Hello and welcome to The Preservationists, the monthly radio show for fans of local historic architecture, the history of unique buildings, and the people from our community working to preserve and restore them. I'm Astronomist Ray, the president of the board of directors at Lower Columbia Preservation Society, LCPS, and the host of The Preservationists. Thank you for tuning in. Today, we will be chatting with Danielle Kerperling, a preservation professional who has worked in the historic preservation industry since 2001. Today, we will be discussing Danielle's career in historic preservation.
So, I just wanted to get some general information about yourself and what you do.
Sure.
You were a part of the Kerperling Preservation. Can you tell me a little
Yes.
bit about your business and your background?
My parents had a construction business when I was growing up, and when I was in high school, I decided I was going to go to culinary arts school. And that was like a last minute decision. That was like March of my senior year. I think my parents were a little nervous about me because I had already been like accepted to colleges, but I think I needed a break. I really do. I think that's what I needed. So I went to culinary arts school. I worked in a bakery for a few years. But by then I had been dating my husband, and my dad had asked him, do you want to come work, help me for the summer? And Jonathan did, and he loved it. He never went back to school. He stayed working with my dad. And then I was working at a bakery. We got married. And a couple of years after we got married, I was talking about, you know, it was a small family business that I was working for, and that like, I loved it. I loved what I was doing. I loved the people, but there really wasn't, I couldn't see a place for me to move up. Like I would just stay in that position forever. And my dad said, I've been waiting for this moment. And he asked me to come work for them pretty much as a glorified secretary. But I had a lot of on the job training. I went back to school. I got a bachelor's degree in business, and then I got an MBA in management. So I kind of went back as a non-traditional student while I was still working and learning on the job. And that's how I got to where I am. It was kind of a windy road, but I do feel like I grew up in it because, you know, that was our dinner conversation. My dad would be talking about the jobs, or if I wanted to spend time with him, I would go to the shop on the weekends and clean the bathroom and, you know, do little things around the shop, sweep up and things like that. So I feel like I've always done it, and I was always really interested in history, but I didn't see myself like working in construction. So when I went to high school, you still had to take like typing classes on a typewriter. And I was like, I don't need to learn how to do this. I'm never going to work in an office. that was a vision I had for myself. And now I work in an office.
Yeah. And, you know, growing up kind of around that environment, was it that, you know, in a construction field, was he, your father's business specifically for historic preservation, or was
so
it
we
in general?
Shift. Yeah, he did do some preservation, and that's what he really enjoyed doing. So after I joined the business a year or two later, we decided to solely focus on preservation. So before that, he did, you know, he would do some remodeling and things like that. But then we did decide to only focus on preservation.
And you stuck with it since. And how many years have you been in this career field?
So I switched in February of 2001. So almost 24 years.
Wow. That's a lot. That's a lot of dedication in that sense.
Yes. Yeah.
To kind of bring up your original degree, you have a degree in business, correct?
Yes.
You've kind of utilized that to kind of create this really interesting site in preservation. You know, your business is all kind of around preservation.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me a little bit about what your profession is and what your day-to-day work is.
Yeah. Our business, Kerperling Preservation Services, we restore 18th, 19th, and early 20th century buildings, primarily woodwork. We do have a shop where we can manufacture trim and doors and windows and cabinets to match the, you know, what was in the house if it's missing. And we also restore doors and windows and restore pieces too. It's not all new, but my day to day is mostly working in the office. So like I do a lot of like content for the website and our social media. I do like project management. I organize things for the bookkeeper. I, you know, go to client meetings. I, you know, do some consulting. And then the other side of the work that I do, which is through the company, is I am part-time executive director for the Historic Preservation Trust of Lancaster County, which we kind of put under the consulting category because I started as a consultant for them. And maybe two years into that, they asked if I would come on as the executive director. And I thought it was a great way to help more people preserve buildings. It's adjacent to what we do, but we do like one building at a time. You know, we're trying to advocate for preservation throughout the county.
Right. And that kind of brings me into my next question. So your business is kind of located, is it in Pennsylvania?
Yeah. So we're in Pennsylvania. We're in Lancaster, and I know you're in Oregon.
Yeah.
We're about an hour and a half outside of Philadelphia. So we're west of Philadelphia.
And now with the architecture scene out there, what is that like? Like I know you said 18th, 19th century and lots of wood buildings, but what are like some of the common like places that you've looked at?
In Lancaster, we're the oldest inland city. So we're the oldest city that wasn't a port city. That's really what that means. And I think it was early 1700s when people started settling here. Like I think the earliest building 1719, something like that. There aren't a ton of those buildings left, but you know, that's when people started to settle here that weren't indigenous. So we have a mix of buildings. We have colonial buildings, we have very early buildings, we have colonial buildings, and then we have like Victorian, and then you know, we have a range. We don't like the West Coast, though, we don't have a lot of like bungalows. We have some mid-century modern, but not a ton because we were already really built out by then. So we do have a mixture of like all the different, and then we also have modern developments like every other place in America. but we have a mixture. And if you walk downtown, you can like in a block, see, you know, a couple hundred years of history. Our downtown did get, you know, affected by urban renewal. So a lot of things got torn down, but we, you know, some buildings got saved, and we have a lot of architectural history that we're trying to encourage people to continue to, you know, take care of and view as important.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, and a lot of the work that you do brings awareness to these historic preservation properties. Now, one thing that you've done in your career is you've launched the Practical Preservation Podcast back in 2019.
Yes.
What inspired you to start this podcast, and how does it help expand awareness and knowledge about what preservation is?
Yeah, I kind of started it because I was in a marketing group and they were like, everybody needs a podcast.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. But I really enjoy it. I enjoy talking to the people that I get to meet, like people that I wouldn't get to encounter regularly, and hear their stories and what they're doing in preservation or what their product does. Or I did an episode this morning. The woman had a PhD in wood epoxies.
Wow.
And I was like, that is so specific. And I don't think I've ever met anybody else with one. She might be the only person.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like those kinds of things are, I just enjoy because I enjoy learning. I enjoy learning about things. So I feel like it's a way for people to learn about preservation and learn about, you know, all the different options there are within preservation. Because I always ask people, you know, how did you get here? And most people, they didn't decide in high school they wanted to be preservationists. They, you know, work some, they, you know, they got exposed to preservation. They're like, oh, this is what I want to do. Talking about expanding awareness and knowledge. I had a woman reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm trying to think. It was last year, maybe in the fall. And she told me that listening to the podcast made her change careers. She's a teacher. She was a history teacher, and she's now going to get her graduate degree in preservation. And I was like, you know, and she said, I just listened to it. She said, and I just decided this is what I want to do. And, you know, that made my day. You know, we can reach out to people across the country and help them learn about preservation and, you know.
Well, and, you know, that's really inspiring to hear that you can just connect with so many people and through that platform. And you have another platform. Can you tell us a little bit more about the Kirpling Preservation Hub? That is a project that you launched. What is it exactly?
So it is an online center, you know, it's a membership site that people can come into, and it has access to like different reports, different downloadable books, different like blog posts that are categorized by like how to preservation knowledge, different categories. It also has the opportunity, and I think this is the fun part. Twice a month, we're going to do preservation coffee breaks. So you'll get to come on with me and usually my husband and have us answer your preservation questions. We did that during the pandemic and I really enjoyed it just because we would get people, random people coming on with their house problems. You know, they would show us their problem and we would, you know, we would give their opinion. Sometimes we agree, sometimes we don't, but by the end we usually do. Yeah. And so I think that's a way to help people that maybe, you know, don't have the money to hire us, you know, for consulting one-on-one, but this is a way to get expert opinions if you're trying to do it yourself, or if you just want to have some more guidance when you're talking to contractors.
Is this all people that are just locally based out of there, or do you get people from outside areas?
No, and that's one of the things that I really like about it is that we are trying to expand the base of people because, you know, it's not something that is limited by geography.
Do you have any certain common, you know, concerns that people bring to you when they're thinking about restoring or preserving a historic building?
The idea of like, does it have to be a museum? And I always say that a building needs to be useful to be preserved, because if it's not going to be able to be used, whether it's in its intended use or like an adaptive reuse, it's going to just deteriorate and be demolished by neglect. So we need to find ways to reuse buildings and make them useful for our modern needs. Now, I don't think that means that we go in and gut them and make it an open floor plan, but you know, that's my opinion. Yeah. And one thing that's interesting, you know, and I think you'll think this is interesting coming from the West Coast, because I was born in Colorado. My dad's family is from Oregon. My mom's family was from Nebraska. And when we moved here, when I was young, I'm starting to talk to people and meet people. And I find out that like their parents, their grandparents didn't have running water in the 50s and 60s because the houses were built before plumbing was put in. And so they had to be retrofitted in. And that was like an extra expense. My parents growing up in the West, they never encountered houses like that because the houses were all built when, you know, plumbing was being put in houses regularly. So I did like those kind of geographic differences are really interesting to me. But mostly older homes, you know, regardless of the geographic area, have similar problems, you know, and they have the similar solutions. The details of the architecture might be a little bit different, but they have the systems work the same.
That's so interesting to hear the comparison of, you know, what one coast might be compared to the other.
Right. Yeah.
Do you notice any other like common differences between, you know, because you've seen architecture pretty widespread.
Yeah. North to south on the East Coast, when you start to get into Maryland, we're fairly close to Maryland. Like I could be in Maryland in less than an hour. And when you start to get into Maryland in the north and in Pennsylvania, our shutters, the bottom shutters are usually paneled, the bottom floor, the lower floor are usually paneled, and so you can shut them and it's secure. And then the uppers are louvered. But if you go into Maryland and south, they're all louvered, even the lower floors, but it's because it's so much warmer. And so they were trying to keep the ventilation going. And so like those kinds of differences, like of why would they do that? Why would they make the windows bigger? Why would they make the floor plan? So those are all things that the people building the houses thought about because they were living without central air conditioning and central heat. So they were using the environment to heat and cool the house. And so those kinds of things are interesting to me because that does make usually older homes much more energy efficient actually than modern buildings.
Right. Yeah. And it's just so interesting because that's exactly the point is it's efficient. It's has purpose.
Yeah. They even thought about like which way to orient to the sun, you know, all of those things that I don't think get thought about as much now.
And now you are an executive director of the Historic Preservation Trust of Lancaster County. Can you tell me a little bit about that role and how does it play a part in preserving that region's history?
My favorite story about the trust is how it was founded, which was before I was born. So I mentioned urban renewal earlier. So this is also a West Coast tie. So our headquarters is in a building that was built in 1787. It's a brick colonial federal style house. And it was slated to be torn down for a big concrete parking garage beside us. And it got built, but a group of people got together to save this building, this little building. They saved it because Andrew Ellicott lived there in the early 1800s after the Louisiana Purchase. And he was the most well-known surveyor in the country. Thomas Jefferson asked, "Will you survey the West for me?" He's like, "No, but if you send somebody to me, I will train them." And Meriwether Lewis was trained in our building. So that was how that building got saved. But it also, it took them then 15 years to get the money together to restore it. That's what can happen when people who care come together and can make a difference within preservation. So that's like kind of my, like, this is a testament to what can happen if people get together in grassroots. But we, as an organization, now advocate and educate for preservation throughout the county. And it's a mixture of places, because we have very rural places with plain communities like the Amish and the Mennonite. We have, our downtown is fairly modern, and we have things going on there, and it's had a renaissance. And then we have like our suburban areas. So we have like a wide variety of different threats to these buildings. And we have, the county has over 60 municipalities, and every municipality has different ordinances in pertaining to the historic properties. So we work with the municipalities to enforce their ordinances, but also make them stronger. But I do, like, I do demolition reviews. I help organize volunteers. We're right now in the process of digitizing our archives. So those are the kinds of things that I do, you know, in addition to like the management kind of stuff of the trust.
We'll return back to our program in just a moment, but first I'd like to introduce my fellow board member at LCPS, our Vice President Lori Serafin, to talk about LCPS topics in preservation.
Thanks, Astronomus. Hey, join me at the next topics on Wednesday, February 19th at 6 p.m. As usual, it's at the LCPS office at 12th and Duane. What's on your wish list in terms of old house parts or antiques for your home? Are you missing a particular piece of hardware, like a cabinet knob or window latch, or a light fixture of a particular size and style, a piece of furniture, the perfect exterior paint scheme? This will be a show and tell program about your wish list. We have a panel of old house part experts and people with experience in finding antiques and vintage items. Let's put our heads together and solve some problems in a group format for you. See you there.
Thank you, Lori. That sounds like it's going to be a fantastic event. If you're just tuning in, this is Astronomist Ray with The Preservationist, and today we're interviewing Danielle Kepperling about her career in historic preservation. Let's hear what else Danielle has to say about her career.
And then, you know, you have also published some books, and one of them was a little bit about the mistakes that people make during preservation,
yes.
Common mistakes. Mm-hmm. Are there any common mistakes that you see people make when attempting to restore historical buildings, and how can they be avoided?
I would say, back to windows, I would say replacing windows. If the reason that you want to replace your windows is because of energy efficiency, it doesn't make sense from a building science standpoint, because the walls are a negative plane with the chimney effect. So the air comes in at the bottom of your building, and then it goes up through the attic. So you'll make out much better and for less money to insulate your attic space, or at least the roof if you don't have an attic. Helping people to see, you know, where they can invest money and where maybe they're not going to get the investment that they think that they will. The other thing that I see, and I think that it probably is a problem all around, probably more so where the bricks were being fired at lower temperatures. So like on the East Coast, some of our bricks were made in kilns. And so some of our bricks are very soft, unlike, you know, what are fired now. And when people put Portland cement in those, it destroys the brick. And so that is another common thing that I see that can be avoided if you know what materials to either use or request to be used.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you also have some involvement with the National Park Service. In your bio, you had mentioned it, mm-hmm. and the Smithsonian Institute. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So we have done projects for both both places. We've done some projects for the National Park Service, and those are interesting. You know, like I said, like think about how you want to use it. You know, we're going to a museum, you know, museum level, and it's the period of significance. So it's the period where the historic person or event happened. So they don't want to necessarily take it back to, you know, when it was built. They maybe want to, you know, somewhere in between. And so it's very interesting to a different perspective and way to deal with it. There's more, you know, more paperwork, more bureaucracy, but they are, you know, interesting jobs. We worked at Steamtown, which is like a steam engine place in Pennsylvania. We've worked at the Kosciuszko House, which is at the Independence Hall. It's part of that site. We've worked in DC at the Carter Woodson Center, and then Hampton National Historic Site in Maryland. So we've worked at multiples of those. And then at the Smithsonian, we actually worked at their Environmental Research Center, which is in Maryland, but it's the oldest building in the Smithsonian inventory. So it was built in the 1700s, and we helped to restore the windows and doors there. Oh, I forgot our most famous Park Service project. So we helped to restore the woodwork at the Peterson House, which is the house across from Ford's Theater that President Lincoln died in.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So, and that's what triggered it, because they had worked on those plans for 10 years before we got them. So like that's what made me think when I said, yeah. So usually for those jobs, they have it kind of all mapped out already. There is some give and take, and we do, you know, have some conversations to kind of figure out the best way, or, you know, uncovering things that, you know, aren't exactly how they thought that they would be, like every other, you know, older building. So it's a little bit of a different process. It's much more focused on like meeting the specifications and meeting the drawing, you know, the plans that the architect has laid out, where with a homeowner or in a private building, we get a little bit more give and take.
What is your vision for the next generation of preservationists? What do you hope to see in key values and principles?
Yeah.
That you hope that the next generation carries forward in their work?
Yeah. I'm on a historic preservation professionals page, and it's an interesting perspective for me, just because I haven't gone through like that academic program, and I don't always, like, I have to pick up what they're saying sometimes. And I see a lot of people getting discouraged because they've spent a lot of money on like master's degrees, and they're not making master degree wages. And there's a big push to have some like salary transparency within preservation. Like, and they actually are, if you want to post a job on there, you have to post what the salary is. And I think that that's probably a good, you know, something good to do. And I do worry. And I think that that's common in a lot of fields right now, people worrying about the amount of debt versus the amount of income. Like, does it make sense? But I'm really encouraged by the number of stories that are being told through building preservation that are more inclusive and acknowledging, you know, hard parts of our history. And I think that this generation will continue to do that and probably push it further than we have. So that's very encouraging to me. I hope that they stay focused on, you know, the basics of carrying on the trade and remembering that and not losing that. I think that when you start to get too academic, you might get more removed from that. And so that's just kind of a worry I have, not that I am against education at all.
Yeah. And what drives your passion for preservation? Because you put in, I'm sure, a lot of time and a lot of effort to do all of this. Your website has so much information, so much details to it. And you can tell that it's really cared for and it's crafted well. Mm-hmm. So what is that motivation that makes you want to do preservation and continue this route?
I think it's really a calling, but I think that, you know, it's my love of history. I feel like we're making a difference. We're doing what we can to make our corner of the world a better place. And I feel like it's important work, and it does it. I feel like it's a passion. Like I don't know what I would be doing otherwise. I mean, I'm sure I'd do something, but this fulfills me.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just so interesting, all the stories that you've told today. And just geographically, it's so amazing to hear about that, the East Coast side of that. Just out of curiosity, how popular is preservation in the East Coast? Are a lot of people interested in it? Do you have like a big community?
There is a community. I don't know if I would say big, but I'm sure it's bigger than the West Coast in some ways, but like just because we're more geographically concentrated. I would say like you still have to seek out preservationists. Like it's not everybody's a preservationist, and some people, you know, especially in my advocacy work, we have to really encourage them to be preservationists.
Yeah. And then is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners about historic preservation or your career or just in general the things that you do, because you know you just have so much that you oversee, even the Heritage Conservation District.
Yeah. So that's a volunteer position. So I serve on, so we have two different historic districts in Lancaster. We have the Heritage Conservation District, which is most of the city. And then we have the HARB, which is the Historic Architectural Review Board, which is like the more stringent, like they review changes to the exterior. So all we review are new construction, demolitions and additions onto existing buildings. I enjoy that because it gives me a chance to see, you know, new designs and kind of help shape that, make sure that they'll fit into the city and to the surrounding neighborhood, because there is a lot of developmental pressure in town. And the developers are being smart right now. They're going after all of the parking lots so that they don't have the fight about tearing down the building. So I do appreciate that. But it's very interesting, and I enjoy it. But I just think that, you know, if people are interested in caring for their older home, that, or if they want to, you know, learn more about preservation, you know, reach out. I'm happy to be a resource, but also, you know, there's a lot online. Be careful who you're listening to.
And then just to kind of wrap up our interview, is there anything that you wish more people knew about historic preservation?
I think the majority of us want to find a common ground that, you know, meets today's needs, but also preserves these buildings that have been here for hundreds of years.
Thank you to my guest for this month, Danielle Kepperling, for chatting with me on this month's episode of The Preservationist. I appreciate you sharing with our listeners about your work in historic preservation. The Preservationist airs every third Tuesday of the month at 9:30 a.m. on KMUN. I'd like to give a special thanks to the team here at KMUN, the staff, members, volunteers, and of course, my fellow board members at the Lower Columbia Preservation Society, and to my fellow board member, Lori Serafin, for telling us about LCPS topics in preservation for the month. I'd also like to give a special thanks to Camila Swerdloff for producing the theme song of The Preservationists. And thank you for listening to The Preservationists. The Preservationist is a production of the Lower Columbia Preservation Society for KMUN, written and produced by Astronomist Ray. And remember, anyone can be a preservationist. Until next time, I'm Astronomist Ray. Thank you for tuning in.